If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now.
I love your show. I just love it.
He calls it as he sees it.
So my daughter turned me on to you, and you're awesome.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub.
You know, as a businessman, I spend my entire day, I work hard for the, you know, make money for my family. So I don't have the time to invest and to know what's going on, you know. And that's why I listen to your show, because you tell it exactly the way it is.
This is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Russell Betts Show. Let me correct that. The Russ Betts Show, hour two. We've got 1 hour in the bank already, and moving on to hour two. I'm sitting here looking at a proposal to make city government stronger in California, and I don't know if I like this idea, but the idea is to, if you want to make California city government stronger, make your city council bigger. And this is a proposal, it's an editorial, I saw it in the LA Times, talking about, you know, if you look at some of the globe's, the world's largest cities, you're likely to see large and energetic city councils. The City Council of Madrid, Spain, apparently has 57 members. I don't know, 57 council members? If LA, Los Angeles, had a city council where each member represented 25,000 people, as they do in these other examples they're pointing to, the Los Angeles City Council would consist of 160 members. Well, that's the same as Berlin has. And by the same formula, the city of San Jose would have 41 council members, and Sacramento would have 21 council members. What happens when it comes time for council member comments? I mean, even if they only got 1 minute, that's 160 minutes in L.A. That's just, I don't get it. There must be something I'm missing. Now, for a city like Desert Hot Springs with a population of 27,000, and they're using a ratio of 25,000 representatives to one, I guess what, Desert Hot Springs would have one representative? Anyhow, that's just some fanciful thought. Somebody apparently went looking around the world and said, hey, they do things differently. Well, it doesn't always work that way. All right. Marijuana is in the news. They call it cannabis these days. Somebody asked me, is it okay to still call it marijuana? Yeah, well, that's its name too. Marijuana, cannabis, call it what you want. But the Department of, the Department of Drug Enforcement Agency, not the Department of, the Drug Enforcement Agency wants information from dispensaries. And this was a case out of San Diego, and it points up to, you know, if you think the feds aren't watching the cannabis, you're wrong. And they're not just leaving it up to the states. In San Diego, the Department of Justice and the Drug Enforcement Agency sued the Bureau of Cannabis Control in California because the Bureau of Cannabis Control refused to comply with a Drug Enforcement Agency subpoena, and where they wanted to find out what was going on with extracurricular drug trafficking, is what they called it. In plain terms, it would be a dispensaries, six of them in San Diego, that were going above and beyond the legal cells, maybe pushing a lot out the back door. And apparently the Department of Justice and the Drug Enforcement Agency caught wind of this, and so they've served a subpoena, an administrative subpoena, on the Bureau of Cannabis Control in California. And they were requesting the cannabis licenses, the name of the applicants, shipping manifest, anything else they could get their hands on, which California normally collects. And the Bureau of Cannabis Control in California responded that it wouldn't produce the desired documents. Well, of course, as you know, this thing went to federal court, and then the courts decided in favor of the feds. They argued that this is all in line with their ability to enforce federal drug laws. So, and the federal court also found that the subpoena was not overly broad. So what this all points up for California and everybody else is, it's a case, as this article points out, the case is a solid reminder to all licensees that states are not the ultimate control when it comes to cannabis. They've exercised their muscle at the Drug Enforcement Agency a few times. When Oregon was producing 1.1 million pounds and only selling 350,000 pounds of it in the state, and 700,000 pounds were going out of the state, they tracked it, they found it, and they dropped the hammer on Oregon. And so, they're just producing way more than they were selling legally. So they're out there and they're hunting it down. Now, we'll just have to see what comes of that. You know, talking about the feds moving into marijuana, we got a new phenomenon that went on in Desert Hot Springs with a place that's called Royal Emerald Pharmaceuticals. And they're billed as a scientific research organization, and they signed a lease to move into the old Kmart building. And, you know, it's a good thing, because who knows what was going to happen to that Kmart building. They were, it was sitting empty and had a few suitors, and most logically or most likely it would have been another market that was going to move in to that facility. Maybe another grocery, who knows which one. But anyhow, that didn't happen. Royal Pharmaceuticals moved in, and they moved in with, well, quickly and with some very high-paying jobs. I was talking to somebody last night who says, hey, I'm real happy I'm working there, and a lot of other people are, and looks like good things going on. Now, what their game is their tie-in with the feds is that they're doing R&D work to try and figure out a way to help come up with a cure or something instead of the opioids. Instead of prescribing opioids to people who have different problems, particularly vets and first responders and other people like this who are in high stress situations, they want to see if maybe they can come up with something that doesn't have these very harsh side effects of the opioids. So the federal government said, fine, let's do this. And so they've set up to do that. Now, it's really an interesting story in government to follow this one, and this might get a bit wonky, but I'm going to compare this to, well, I'm going to tell you how something like this happens, because there were four cities that were vying for this this project that wanted to move there. I mean, they've done great things already. The amount of donations they've provided around the city has just been fantastic, helping the Little League, the Junior All-American. Food Now was seeing a huge rush in the number of people that were asking for food. They were worried what was going on, and I talked to Dana Johnson down there, the executive director of Food Now, and he says, we don't know what we're going to do. I said, Dana, put together a wish list, and he did. And so I took that wish list to Royal Emerald, and hey, they came up with $10,000 like that. And Dana Johnson going, wow, okay, our worries are over. We can breathe more easily here. So anyhow, it's been a great partner, and I know that the city of Coachella really wanted it, couldn't come through. Cathedral City wanted it. I forget what the other city was, but they were looking all over the Coachella Valley, and they settled on Desert Hot Springs. And for one of the reasons that they could, and what made it possible, is that they could move quickly. So here comes the lesson in government. Actually, we can thank Quick Quack Car Wash, the situation there, for Royal Emerald Pharmaceuticals moving into Desert Hot Springs. Now, you would think that a car wash along a main boulevard would be something normal. I mean, everywhere that I have ever been, I never thought that a car wash was anything that didn't fit on a main boulevard. But it turns out when Quick Quack Car Wash came to the city, they wanted to set up, and they were setting up in all the cities. Well, they were delayed for 90 days in our city because apparently the city attorney informed us, no, you don't have the proper zoning in place for Quick Quack to move in. So you've got to do the zoning hearing and everything else. And, well, finally, we got our Quick Quack Car Wash in Desert Hot Springs. It's busy. It's nice. Everybody likes it. It looks proper. And you don't have to use one of the little smaller gas station ones or the spray and wash. You can actually go to a proper, hey, Desert Hot Springs got a proper car wash. But, you know, if Quick Quack Car Wash had said, you know, we're just not going to go through this. We're not going to wait this long. It seems to me, you know, what's the problem with a car wash in a main boulevard. So anyhow, you know, you got to follow the legal process. So after all that went through and took all that time, the city council said, hey, wait a minute now. What if somebody else comes along? What if a testing lab comes along? Would they be, oh no, they'd have to go through the same zoning. Or what if some, you know, so we said, you know what, we want to set this up so that the zoning is in place now. We don't know what's going to happen. And this was 2-3 years ago. But I know I pushed, and a couple other council members pushed, to say, look, get this taken care of in advance, because somebody's going to come along that can't wait. They need to move quickly. And this is something we can take care of in advance legally and do it proper. And so we put that through. Fast forward 3 years, and Royal Emerald Pharmaceuticals says, we need to be somewhere. We need to be somewhere now. But if we have to wait 90 days for a public hearing process and everything else that's involved, we'll go somewhere else. And we said, you know what? We took care of it already, and we got a building for you. They came out, they looked, and end of a story. They've moved in, they've set up. The parking lot is all redone. They're landscaping the front of it. Pretty soon, it's not going to look like it was a Kmart building. They already, the Kmart sign's gone. A new sign went up. The parking lot's spiffy new, and new trees, new landscaping, everything. It looks like a brand new parking lot, and they're putting the proper office building look landscaping in the front of it now. And hey, 100 new jobs in Desert Hot Springs just to start. And the starting pay is $43,000 a year. And I was talking to the owner, and he says, you know, we just hired two people. Both of them were making $15 an hour, family. And they're now making $25 an hour. And they're very, very happy. They've seen a nice improvement in their life. And it's right here in town. They don't have to drive out of the city. So, you know, it just goes to show if you do things right and you know what the process is and you press, opportunity will come along. And you got to be ready when opportunity knocks. And so that's the story of Royal Emerald Pharmaceuticals. And we're really glad to have them in our city. All the rest of you city council members listening, mayors in other cities, we're really glad to have Royal Emerald Pharmaceuticals in our city. It's a really good deal. All right, I can get down to a little election fun. I don't know if many people realize what candidates are going through, but yeah, and somebody asked me, say, well, why can't you come over? And I said, I'm really busy right now. For those of you who don't know, I'm running for re-election for Desert Hot Springs City Council with six other challengers. And, you know, you want to do all you can to make sure you get your message out to the voters. And it's a particularly difficult time right now. It's, you know, you can't go knocking door to door like you used to. You can't stand out in front of the market. You got these social distancing rules. And, you know, normally you would try to see somebody out in the garage, you pull over, stop, and like an obnoxious door-to-door salesman, you say, hi, I'm running for city council. Is there any questions I can answer for you? And usually most people who are in tune will say, yeah, you know, this only happens every 2 years, and yeah, I am interested. What, you know, tell me about yourself. But you can't do that now. So anyhow, that you're looking for all kinds of different ways to get your message out to people, and it's a crunch time because you've got everything is now vote by mail. And the thinking is, when these ballots come out to all of us starting around October 1st, there's going to be a whole bunch of people who are real anxious to get their vote in because of this national situation, how contentious it is. And somebody's going to go, man, I can't wait to vote that guy out of office, or I can't wait to show my support for the guy that's in office. And I'm going to vote now, and I'm not waiting. So anyhow, it gets to be real busy for you know, at this time. But there's some fun things that come along, like how do they determine what the order is on the ballot? Like whose name gets to go first? Well, I'm going to share that with you because every candidate waits until the Riverside County Register of Voter announces the system that determines who's going to be first on the ballot. We got that coming up here on the Russ Bedt Show here on iHub Radio. More to come and that.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
No way. That's incredible.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right, we're back. And it's a trying time for candidates, but it's also there are some parts of the campaign that become fun. And one of them is when the Register of Voters in Riverside puts out memorandum number 20171. I'm looking at it here, and it says general election randomized alphabet drawing. That's the subject of the memo, and it says in accordance with elections code section blah blah blah, the Secretary of State's offices conducted a drawing of the letters of the alphabet to determine the randomized alphabet for use in the above election. And listed below is the official order of letters for use in determining placement of candidates' names on the ballot. And what you do is they reach in and they pull out a letter. There's 26 of them, right? 26 letters in the alphabet. And they pull out a letter, and the first one that comes out is whatever letter it is will determine anybody with, say, like the name of B. Well, there would be first on the ballot. Now, if your name happened to be Betts, that might be an interesting thing to find out that you're first on the ballot. And so it turns out that B was the first letter pulled. Now, just to carry this example further using my name, sorry. If somebody's name was Bates, well, now, and my name was Betts, now you got to go to the list and see, okay, who comes next? Well, there's nobody in there named Betts or Bates, but if there was somebody named Bates running against Betts, well, then number two, the second letter pulled out was an A. So Bates would be ahead of Betts, but it turned out that that didn't happen. Well, the third letter turns out to be E. So anyhow, you go through the whole process, and it determined what the order is for all the candidates. And this happened in every city, not just Desert Hot Springs. I'm just using my name for an example. But for example, in Desert Hot Springs, you got three candidates with the letter G. And G was the seventh letter pulled out. And then now you got two of them have the letter I, Gibney and Gilbert. So you go, okay, well, where are their names going to appear? So you go down this list, and I is number 17th, and there's another one, Griffith. So if R is before I, then Griffith will be first. But as it turns out, R was pulled out 25th. So Gilbert and Gibney now are trying to figure out which one is first. And then you go back to the B in Gibney. So it ends up being Gibney, Gilbert, then Griffith in the order. And you end up with Roger Nunez and Jason Moore through this whole process. So anyhow, I don't know if anybody ever knew that that took place, but every candidate does. Every candidate waits for that list to come out. They usually get an email from the city clerk, says, hi, the state's randomized alphabet listing has been pulled out, and here it is. And you go, okay, well, this is be interesting. Where's my name going to be on the ballot? And generally speaking, people like to be first on the ballot. That ends up being a good position. I don't know why, but just, you know, at the top of the ballot, it's easier to find than in the middle. And I think the second best position, they say, is the end one. Now, that's all the consultants tell you that. I don't know what it matters. Mostly, it comes down to you better go out there and work really hard to make sure you get your message out. And the problem this election is, getting your message out is a whole lot more difficult because you can't go knocking door to door. I'm going to invite everybody who's interested in this election, reach out, pick up the phone, call people, find them on social media, Facebook Messenger, whatever it is. Get a hold of them any way you can and ask them some questions. Say, where do you stand? What do you believe? We don't even have any debates going now because they can't figure it out to meet in person. It's been a really unusual, difficult time. This isn't the first time I've been through the process. And I just, you know, it's difficult. I like to get out and meet people. And so anyhow, all right. So we were talking a little bit in the first hour about the vacation rental business, and we didn't get to fully develop that. And I promised we'd get into it later. So later is now. Cathedral City started making noise a few months back that they were gonna go forward with plans to eliminate short-term rentals. Well, sure enough, here in the Desert Sun, and an article out this week, Cathedral City is going to phase out short-term vacation rentals by 2023. And if in case you're wondering what that is, that means that, you know, the homes next to you in your neighborhood that are being used as vacation rentals, well, they won't be vacation rentals anymore, apparently, in Cathedral City. That's going to end. And then Palm Desert now is going through with the same thing. They're also going to put a moratorium on. So I don't know what's going on. I was surprised when I saw Palm Desert. This thing is moving through quite quickly. So what are you going to do? You know, the problem is, if you've got a vacation rental next to you that's not a problem with a with a vacation rental owner who's responsible, and I had one of those next to me, and it was never a problem. It was never any different than the noise that you would normally hear across the fence. But if you got a raging party next to you, well, that's a whole different story. And we are going to get into just a little bit more of that. We've got to take care of a few important announcements here. We've got to pay the bills around here. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio, and we're back with more.
For educating so many of us. I think you're the best.
We are the people in your neighborhood.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
All right, we're back. Welcome back to the Russ Betts Show. We're going to get back onto this vacation rental. So what you had going on was you had Cathedral City starting to talk about short-term vacation rentals being a problem. And they had a few meetings on it, and then the next thing you know, they're going to eliminate short-term rentals in the city by 2023. And if you don't know what a short-term rental is, that's where somebody takes their home and turns it into a motel. Now, I had one of those next to my house for years. And I was never, ever a problem. And there was another one over on the next street, and they kept the place up very nice. And sure, you would see people show up, and occasionally next door to me, you'd see somebody pull in and somebody pulling out, and they kind of met in the middle and said, oh, yeah, it's great, and kind of, oh, yeah, we just had a great time. You'll enjoy it. It's a nice place. And they had a pool, and you'd hear the splashing around the pool, but it was never any more noise than I would ever have heard from a neighbor living there. Just happens out this was a second home for these people, so it wasn't a problem. But as a city council member, you get lots of calls from people. And one of the calls we've been getting lately in Desert Hot Springs is from a couple of few houses in Desert Hot Springs where it's a constant party. And so what I did was I put out the, you know, I get the call and I say, okay, look, I understand you got this complaint and, you know, you called the police, they showed up, they drove by, they didn't really shut it down, or the people were quiet for a little bit and the party went on again. And didn't really solve the problem for you. So do me a favor, it's a lot easier for me to deal with this and understand the issue if you will let me, you know, give me a call when it's going on. I don't care what hour it is. I'm up late. You can ring my phone at midnight, and I'm going to get it on the first ring because, well, I'm just one of those people who likes to stay up late. I can never understand somebody who goes to bed at 9 o'clock every night. God bless you people out there that can do that, but, you know, I got at least 4 hours to go starting at 9 o'clock at night. Anyhow, but the, sure enough, somebody rings my phone and says, well, you're really sure you want to come out here? I said, yeah, I'll drive over. It wasn't too far away. So I drove over, and I'm standing in this guy's backyard at 11:30 at night, and I'm listening to this party going on. And you go look on Airbnb at the rental listing, and sure enough, they put this really nice party bar outside, and come on, have a great time, bring your friends. And so this guy's listening to this outside his neighbor, outside his, you know, across from his fence, 3, 4, 5 nights a week. It's a busy rental place, and it's just not right. Now, if it be me, I might have some, you know, my stereo speakers pointed at that house, playing something like maybe It's a Small World, you know, that obnoxious Disneyland song. You go past that ride, and that it's just, anyhow, that might be what I would consider doing, but probably better just to call your councilmember and trying to get something remedy in there. So if you go online and you look, you can see there's an article out there that says, wow, my noisy Airbnb renters ruined my vacation short-term rental business. They made so much noise, it got shut down. And this guy said that, you know, it's ultimately the responsibility of the rental owner to make sure his property doesn't become a problem. Well, in Cathedral City, they said, no, you know what? It's our responsibility. And now Palm Desert Also, I'm looking at an article on the Desert Sun. Palm Desert OK's moratorium on new short-term vacation rentals. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in Desert Hot Springs. When I researched this, I started looking around, and I found up in Big Bear City, they require every short-term rental to have a plaque on the front of the door of the house that says the number of occupants that can be there and the number of cars. And, you know, some of the complaints come in is, geez, they've got 50 people in this house and there's cars everywhere. We can't find parking. Well, Big Bear doesn't allow that. It says right there with each house is required to have. Now, I don't know if I like the idea of plaques, but the other thing they have is a phone number. And if you call that phone number, it rings to somebody who can get in touch with those tenants immediately and tell them, knock it off, shut down the noise. And so, and then the other thing would be that this one guy, he said, wrote this article about how his business got killed because he was advertising a device that monitors the decibel level. And if it gets too loud, it's just a little noise detection device that he puts in his rental unit outdoors. And if it gets to a certain decibel, this thing automatically sends a text or an alert to his phone. And that ends up letting him know, hey, there's a problem. And he calls down there and says, hey, guys, knock off the noise. So anyhow, I asked our city staff to take a look into that because, you know, with a situation like the one next to me where it wasn't a problem, you hate to throw out the baby with the bathwater. But if it all becomes bathwater and you only got a few that are going, and I'm sure these residents who are next door are just, you know, couldn't wait to have this thing end. They want that nightmare next door to them to stop. And, you know, it's just not right. So apparently that's what Cathedral City and Palm Desert have decided. And we'll see what happens. But now, of course, you got the vacation rental owners are, you know, saying, hey, no, don't do this to us. You're killing our business. And somebody made the case that it was going to drop property values. I saw this argument somewhere. I forget where it was. In Cathedral City, I think. And they were saying it was going to drop property values if somebody was forced to, you know, if there was no more vacation rentals. And I go, well, first off, property values only count if you're planning to sell your house. In non-monetary terms, your property value is it a nice, enjoyable place to live? And if you got people with a screaming, raging party next to you every night, well, your property value is pretty low as far as you're concerned. Now, the other argument is, you know, the property values will be less people wanting to buy houses for vacation rentals. What's your property value if you have to declare to your realtor, hi, by the way, be sure these people know there's a raging Airbnb rental next door to us. And that's something you have to disclose. I mean, if you ever complained about it to the city, there's a record there. You get yourself in trouble. You don't disclose something like that. So if somebody says, you know, I'm not sure I want to buy this house if that's going on. Anyhow, we beat that horse to death, and we're going to go on to some other news. And this is interesting. Now, we've all heard that the entire election is going to be vote by mail. And those vote by mail ballots start going out right around October 1st, maybe October 3rd, something in there. And so everybody's going to have their ballots. Now, there's this talk about what's going on at the post office, and everybody's worried their ballot won't get mailed in time, won't receive their... I'm going to maybe get into that a little bit. They're talking about the sorting machines. Well, I don't think the mail for the vote-by-mail ballots ever see a sorting machine. I can't figure where somebody made the commotion about sorting machines and getting rid of sorting machines because I don't think everybody knows where these ballots are going. They're going to the register of voters. But anyhow, there's some concern about that. People are worried that their ballot won't get there. So what the register of voters has done is they have set up voter assistance centers, what they call them, and ballot drop-off locations. Now, I wasn't exactly clear what that was, so I called up the Register of Voters, and what they've done is they've basically gone into every city and set up multiple locations where they're calling them voter assistance centers, where you can go in and if you're worried about, you know, is your ballot going to get there? Well, here you can go drop it off. It doesn't ever see the post office, doesn't ever see the postal system. It just shows up. You just put it in the box right there yourself. Well, what I learned from the registrar when I called him is that you will also be able to vote in person if you want to. Now, I've worked the polls, you know, at the polling stations years ago. I did it for like 3 elections in a row. And it used to be if you wanted to vote in person, you would bring your, and you were on the vote by mail rolls, you would bring your ballot, and you would surrender it, and then you could vote in a machine or with the paper ballots or whatever it is. And well, now they're going back to that system. So if you want to vote in person, you're going to get a mail-in ballot, and you can fill that out and mail it in like, you know, half the voters now do, or more than half of them do. But if you really want to vote in person, just hang on to that and go take it down to the polling place, and you'll look up your name in the book like you always did, and then you'll give them that ballot. They'll destroy it or whatever they're going to do, so you can't vote twice, and then you can go in and vote in person if that's what you want to do. So that's new. I think that's interesting, because a lot of people really like to vote in person. I just, every election, I've never voted by mail ever, not even absentee. I've always voted in person. And I like the idea of going down there on election day. Anyhow, but, you know, I know people who vote by mail, and they say it's a lot easier. And so, but for some reason, there's some kind of worry that the post office won't be able to deliver these ballots to the registrar of voters. You understand, I'm not an expert in this, and if you want somebody to call in and correct me on this, you certainly can. But I think the mail sorting machines are when you have multiple pieces of mail all going to different addresses, like each one of us individually sending off a letter to Aunt B or Uncle Mick or whoever we're sending it off to, and they're all coming in, and they all got to be sorted, so they have these sorting machines. But if every mail piece comes in that says going to the register of voters at this, what's the address, and at 2720 Gateway Drive in Riverside, I don't even think they even have to go through a sorting machine. They're going to say, hi, put these, they're all coming in, put them in the truck and send them off to deliver them to the register of voters location at 2720 Gateway Drive. They don't need to be sorted. They're already going all to one address. Anyhow, we'll see what happens. You know, it's the same with a lot of mail that you get. It's already sorted, pre-sorted before it ever gets to the post office. I don't know what that commotion was about, but maybe one day we'll figure out. Look at an interesting thing here. The Indio International Tamale Festival canceled due to coronavirus health concerns. Apparently that decision was made this week. It's been an ongoing event that typically tracks about 100,000 people into the city's downtown area for tamales, music, and other entertainment. And Indio Mayor Glenn Miller issued a statement saying, despite the importance of the event to the community, with the ongoing concerns over COVID-19, large gatherings of people will just be untenable. So, you know, and you've got a couple concerns here, and I don't think this doesn't get mentioned very often, but if you're going to put on a large event, let's just say that all this virus reporting and cases and the numbers are way down, and we had flattened the curb, and we met the governor's color-coded system for opening, and everything was hunky-dory, you still got the insurance. You got to go buy an insurance policy that says if somebody should get COVID and get traced back to this event and get sick or die, somebody's going to be liable for that. So you're going to have to get a COVID rider. Any insurance company out there going to issue that? And what are they going to charge for it? You know, a lot of concerns over liability come up with an event like this. And this is one, maybe one that's adding to the issue. I'm certain that it's like Indio Mayor Glenn Miller said, that this large gathering of people is just untenable. But, you know, it's an early decision to make. And now you got, Coachella was supposed to happen in October. And I see signs along the I-10 saying, announcing Stagecoach. Maybe they just left the signs up, but they said that's coming up in October. I don't know if any of these events are going to take place or not. Where are we at here? Well, you know what? I hear some music. All right. Oh, my goodness. I think we're done for the day. I think we're done. We didn't get to the entire stack. I wanted to. I had more here for you. But you know what? There's always next week. And really good to be here in the new studios. It's like driving a brand new Ferrari. I mean, they didn't spare any expense in setting this place up. And now we're live streaming. What could be better? Okay, this is Russ Betts on iHub Radio bidding you adieu until next week. Happy to have you with us.
live from Palm Springs.
Hey, everyone, listen to this, please.
10 years ago, you know, this was a thriving, booming economy, but we're not going to that extent. This thing isn't a total crash.
I want to tell you, you got the radio voice, my friend.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, that's really honorable.
Now, here's Russ Betts on iHub Radio.
Well, you know when you go to a concert and they announce that, okay, that's it, we're done, and they go off stage and then everybody yells, more, more, more. Well, I'm a little ahead of myself and went off stage and the producer comes in and he says, no, more, more, you got more, your show's not over yet. So, all right, we're here. Anyhow, I took some time during the break to... Well, the campaign sign wars have started. We were talking a little bit about the elections, and so I got somebody posted that says, I took a picture of my sign when I put it up. That's what new candidates do. They take pictures of the sign. Actually, all candidates do. They just want it to look. And they said, to their surprise, 5 days later, their sign is missing. And they hoped at the very least someone just pulled it up and laid it down, but that wasn't the case. It's completely gone. And it's not so much the sign, but I used my real estate frames so the wind wouldn't blow them away. And, these are things that candidates go through. Is if you put your signs up, especially in a windy city like Desert Hot Springs, on these little wire frames, you see, they don't. The sign just disappears. Or if you use a very non-sturdy type paper, like I see some people doing, well, they end up just getting shredded in the wind. It's quite a challenge. You've got to, take extra precautions. So this person apparently bought one of those real estate frames, and those are expensive. They go for like 15, 20 bucks each. And so they used one of those, and apparently that's disappeared. I got to read here more. I didn't get all through this too, but they said they're a positive person. And another candidate complained to the city about my video highlighting our senior center. And they said they're not going to run a negative campaign. It's certainly, anyhow. So the problem is, if you're a new candidate, there is not a candidate out there that has not had their signs go missing. Now, I had involved in an election, and the banners kept going missing. We kept buying them back. So what I did was I hired a guy with a camera to sit there and catch somebody. And I didn't know how long he was going to be there, but I was going to pay him because, dang it, I was bound and determined to catch him. And he calls me about a half hour later and says, wow, you're not going to believe this. I had just sat down, and a guy pulls up on a truck, and he starts walking towards his banner. So I just started following him, rattling off pictures. He takes down the banner from one side. I got all that on film. He takes down the other side, and he's walking back to the truck with this banner crumpled up in his arm, and he looks and he sees me, and he's got this deer in his headlights look, and actually captured that frame. And there they were, license plate and everything, caught the guy. Now, I made a mistake. We agreed because somebody pressed, oh, please don't give him a record, don't prosecute him, we're sorry. And so we kind of agreed not to do that. And I think that was a mistake because in subsequent elections, you will see every candidate's sign get shredded, except maybe one. And there's always these claims that go out there with people getting all excited about their signs, making some kind of accusations that somebody has taken down their signs. Now, in that case, there was. Well, I had other signs that kept missing. So I didn't. Again, I hired a guy and to sit there and watch. And he watched and waited and waited. And finally, he says, well, I found out what it was. The kids walking home from school were picking up the signs and carrying them off into the desert. So I wait till after school, and I see the kids. I said, hey, you guys taking our signs? I said, oh, yeah, we've set them all up out there in the desert. So I go out there, and there's everybody's candidate's sign just staked up. The kids are just having fun. They didn't think anything of it. It wasn't malicious. It was just kids having fun. But you could be sitting there blaming somebody else for that. Now, I've noticed a few of my signs gone missing already. And if they blow over in the wind, they're usually there. They're just gone. And so apparently this has happened now. But don't get off on blaming people for your sign going missing and start blaming other candidates. You know, it's other candidates' friends. But, I have stood up more candidate signs that were running against me, even this election. I've seen some that have fallen over, and I put them back up. And don't get on here and start just blindly. If you want to find out, you want to catch somebody, you want to blame somebody on social media and start raising these accusations saying you don't want to go negative, but then casting aspersions on candidates who are running against you is doing this, then do your due diligence. Get out there with a camera or film. Do like I did and catch them and you get the proof. But you really shouldn't be sitting there saying, dropping names, or not even, you're not dropping names, but just alluding that somebody is doing this. So, you know what? Yep, it's happening. It's going to happen. It's part of running. And it happens all the time. So, anyhow. All right. So this one, this is about our residents, our city, to continue to move our city forward. It's certainly not about the seven individuals running for city council. It's about standing up for our residents and continuing to do the best to give them the resources so we can all improve their lives. That's what it's about. It's not about campaign signs. And don't touch other candidates' campaign signs. And if you're a friend of a candidate, it doesn't do them any favors. If you're friendly to a candidate and you go remove their opponent's campaign signs, guess who gets blamed? Your friend is the candidate. Don't do it. Just leave them alone. It costs a lot of money. You know, and especially for the candidates that aren't well funded. I mean, they spend all they can on the signs, and then some. I ran an election before where we put out 250 signs, and I call up on the phone. I put them out on a Saturday, and I call up on a Thursday, and I go, you know what? Every one of those signs is gone. And at the end of the election, we caught the person that did it. They had a pickup truck full of our signs. We happened to come across them, and we found them. So this goes on all the time, and I guess this is just the point in the campaign where, you know, here comes the sign controversy. Stick to the issues. The issues are what's going on in your city where you're running, what's important, what's not, and don't need to be going off on that. Now, here's an issue with somebody here who had their tire on the back of their, this one's a Honda CR-V. You ever see those? The RAV4s also have tires. They used to be mounted on the back. This person says, in my own parking spot, thieves stole my spare tire. And they also stole my son's spare tire the night before. And this is at a housing community apartment complex in Palm Springs, but it's going on all over the place. The petty theft is just out of hand. And the police, if they catch somebody, if they caught this person citing this, they aren't going to jail. They're going to get a ticket. It's going to be a cite and release. And they're going to laugh. And maybe they have to give that tire back, but they're going to go get 10 more. Yeah, you got a story up in, Los Angeles area, one of the cities up there, where they caught the same person four times in a 24-hour period. And they just kept citing and releasing. And that's a big, big problem. It's something needs to get worked on. And we got that brand new Indio jail down there, chock full of beds, but they aren't taking anybody because apparently I don't know. All right, now we're done. We're done for the day. We're done for the week. We'll be back here next week in these beautiful new studios. I'll get it figured out here. But hey, iHub Radio is doing good. Happy to have you here, and we'll see you next week. This is Russ Betts signing off for another week. And more great programming coming up.